Hey friends, Devin again for another episode of the Bardic Babble podcast, a show where we interview creators about the things that they create. On today's episode, we're diving feet first into the Twitch sphere with Malika and Zach Lim Eubank, the dynamic power couple behind Hyper RPG. For those of us that aren't versed in Twitch.tv, it is a live streaming platform in which content creators can produce shows around video games, cooking, music, and of course, tabletop RPGs. And the team behind Hyper RPG kind of lead the way in the tabletop RPG scene. They produce some of the highest quality shows available for amazing camera work, a hyper diverse cast and crew, and of course, a very strong and progressive business model to back it all up. You aren't going to want to miss this episode. We really get into the meat and potatoes of a lot of the social issues going on in the world right now. So don't go anywhere. Stay tuned after the ad break as we dive on in. Unless you're going to head on over to either iTunes or Podchaser to leave the show a rating and review. To those of you that have already done so, thank you so much. It really helps us to continue to bring new people into the show and for others to have the opportunity of listening to these amazing interviews. So again, don't go anywhere. We're going to hear a quick ad break, and then we're going to dive on in with Malika and Zach. Welcome back, listeners. We have Malika Lim Eubank and Zach Eubank joining us today to dive into the Twitch side of tabletop RPGs. Malika, Zach, how are you guys doing today?
Great. Good.
You guys are officially my first weekend recording, by the way.
Oh, wow. That's the only time you probably could have grabbed us.
Well, I'm glad we could. All right. So you two are the dynamic power couple behind Hyper RPG. Just between the two of you, can we get a elevator pitch as to what Hyper RPG is? I know there's a lot, but...
Yeah, like you said, my name is Malika Lim Eubank, Hyper RPG. You know, we had this little spiel that we're a hyperactive, interactive, community-driven channel built by you guys for you. That's what we say on camera when we're live streaming on Twitch. But in essence, we are a video production company deeply interested in interactive storytelling and shared gaming moments.
So when did the concept of Hyper RPG come around?
Oh man, this is a story. Malika will like to always jump in and be like, well, I introduced you, so we'll start with that. I was running Geek & Sundry's live network. I launched Geek & Sundry's Twitch channel, and I was show running for them. And while doing that, Malika introduced me to Jordan Weissman, who was a professor of hers at USC. And we started talking behind the scenes while I was working there just about if there was anything I was missing from the experience at Geek & Sundry that I wanted to try more of. And there were definitely some things. And I think something I really wanted to explore, especially with Jordan, was the idea of shared interactive experiences. We had done a little bit of that at Geek & Sundry, but I had always felt a little held down in the corporate structure with kind of Legendary sitting over us of not being able to fully embrace Twitch and the interactive tools that were presented there, and how we kind of always had to make our content work not only for Twitch, but also for YouTube and SVOD services. And we were only kind of scratching the surface of what the interactivity was. And I had seen how there was a community sitting there, especially after launching Critical Role, that was just dying for a little bit more, and wanting to be a part of the story, wanting to be a part of that experience. So teamed up with Jordan and with Malika's help and many others at the start, we started up in Seattle to focus a little bit more on industry insider type stuff at first, as well as interactive storytelling. And as the channel kind of evolved, we just really started honing in on making sure we were telling stories and making sure that the audience's voice was heard in those stories and focusing on those interactive models.
Nice. So what are some of the interactive elements that you guys have applied over the years to the channel?
So how much time do we have?
There's so many. We almost every show we launch has some new experiment involved. I mean, we've done everything from like massive LARPs where every person playing is a representation of a chat room member who's been role-playing their characters in a Discord, to immediate interactive models where, for instance, when Malika ran the Power Rangers show, while you were watching, we had an extension that was built where you could build your own ranger, send your ranger out on missions like a text-based adventure game, update your ranger, and then while the show was live, you actually had the ability to send energy to the rangers on screen to give them better dice rolls, and you would see all this happening live and interactive. You know, you could literally just drag your energy points to the character on screen and using the extensions from Twitch. And so we've done so much different stuff. Some of it is small, minor, and just about the feeling that you get in the immediacy to make you feel like your voice matters. And others are much larger endeavors where you're playing a character for months as a chat room member, and we find ways to incorporate that into a high production setting and make you a part of the story.
When I have to explain this to people who like don't know what Twitch is or don't know what games are outside of Monopoly, this is the example I always use, which is imagine you're watching a football game, but you in the stands can create an avatar on the field, or you could change the color of the football, or you could add another football. Those are the kinds of places we like to play in as game designers and content creators. It's bringing presence to the viewer, like at the table or in the game, and also allowing them to really rewrite the rules.
Right. Sometimes, unfortunately, we go as far as letting them be the coach on the team on the field.
Yes.
And that doesn't always go as well. As you can imagine with armchair coaches, we go too far sometimes. And that's part of the fun, is seeing like how far can we take it before it completely breaks apart, and learning what kind of guardrails we have to put on these things to not only help keep the story great, but elevate the story and teach the audience that they're storytellers in their own right and empower them to share their stories and be a part of that process.
I think we're very blessed with a really fantastic, positive community. And us game designers have this saying about the magic circle. Maybe you've heard about it. And because we have such a fantastic community, and every day we turn live, we turn our cameras live, and then it's assumed that, you know, we're all cool and we all jump into the circle, and then maybe somebody does something that not necessarily is offensive or bad or wrong, but we have a new realization of, oh, this is the kind of game we're playing. And so it's really interesting to kind of draw that circle as we're playing the game together.
And I do want to jump off of a point Malika made there about community. And I think too many times when we're doing interviews and we start talking about our community and how grateful we are, I think it's important, especially when we're talking to people who we know do have communities on Twitch or are looking to build their own community. I don't want to act as if that this is something we were just gifted, or that it was just like, we have a great community. And I know everyone will say that about their community. Creating a good community is a lot of work. And I think we don't talk enough sometimes about how a large portion of our company and time and resources is based on building the community we want to support the kind of content that we want to create. That in and of itself is a huge part of the job, where we're having to make those hard decisions as creators to say, not every single person is a good person to be a part of this community. We have to find the right people and empower them, you know, focusing more on proper engagement than just a view and being able to go back to stats and say like, oh, we had this many concurrent watching. I've done that road. You know, I've been a part of that world when I had to create those kind of stats, and I found those to be kind of hollow. So we focus more on proper engagement that supports the kind of channel we want to be. And that in and of itself is a lot of work and takes a lot of time and energy and resources to shape and mold that into exactly what you want it to be.
Gotcha. So now when you guys are sitting down with a pitch deck or with the team to create whatever the next concept for the show is, can you just take us through kind of a abbreviated A to Z? What does that look like? It sounds like there's a lot that goes into the marketing concepts of it. So I'm very interested to hear a little more of that.
Oh yeah, Malika's got this. This is her bag. She loves the diagrams and the charts, and she loves the whiteboard.
Oh my goodness gracious. So, many of our shows, especially, I assume that most of your viewers or listeners are interested in our tabletop RPG shows. The concept comes from either internal, external, or a mix of both. We might have an idea of like, hey, let's do a tabletop RPG, but in this way, we're going to play D&D, and whoever, you know, laughs or breaks character rolls with disadvantage. You know, that might be an internal idea, or it might be an external idea, or both. Like, we went to Saban Brands, and we're like, we love tabletop RPGs, we love Power Rangers, let's mush them together.
And that took 8 months of pitching.
Yes. Yes. So, yeah. And then they go back to their, you know, bosses, and those bosses go to their bosses, and it goes up the chain when you work with a brand that large. And it's like 8 minutes of trying to convince them that this is a good idea, providing them statistics, conceptual ideas, just any kind of argument, you know, emotional, metrics based, et cetera, to explain like, hey, you want to do it. It'll be great. Just trust us. And then,
but inside of that pitch meeting, though, telling them, just trust us, we're having to, as designers, you know, in that instance, I was coming at it from the production angle, and Malika was coming at it as the game designer angle, and we're building a pitch deck where Malika's like, here's what I think it could be as a game. Because not only did we go to them with an idea for a show, we went to them and said, we have to build this game from the ground up because there is no Power Rangers RPG. So Malika developed the Power Rangers RPG just in the pitches for us to be able to launch that show. So she designed the game while I was designing the show concept. And from the start, we're thinking, okay, what is what we want to do? It's an emotional response to how much Malika loves Power Rangers. That's where we started. And from there, it's like, how do we translate that to an audience? What is the audience missing that we need to give them? I think we think a lot about, we don't like retreading water. That's probably why you don't see us really play D&D on our channel. After launching Critical Role and working over there for a year, it's kind of like, well, why would I do D&D again unless we're doing something that's new and different? So we're always thinking, what has not been filled yet? So then we start asking those questions of, what does a Power Rangers show do that other shows can't do? And Malika starts talking about teamwork and the feeling of a positive, you know, environment, and how it's not so much about, yes, it's a combat system, but it's also like friendship system in a lot of ways.
And it's not very tactics heavy, you know, like Power Rangers never go into their Megazord and they're like, okay, you know, raise the right cannon 36 degrees. Like, it's not that kind of game. So I wanted to make sure that the user experience for the players at the table, and then also for the viewers of the players at the table, match that feeling of friendship and teamwork, and less like tactics or, you know, things that didn't feel like it fit with the brand and that type of experience we're trying to craft. And then after we have the green light, it's just like a rush for production. And Zach is mostly in charge of that part, getting the visual assets ready. I was crunching on the extension because I designed that with our engineer. We call him Pillow Zach, Jeff Baldwin, in the TwitchCon hotel room so that like we could show it to the extension team at TwitchCon so that we could announce it. It was crazy.
Yeah. And there's a lot of steps. Yeah. There's a lot of steps Malika's jumping there in the development process, but it's kind of, you know, every step of the way, we're always trying to remember, like, what are our goals? What's the end goal here? We never kind of go into it just being like, let's make a show. You know, we're too busy. We have too little resources here as a company, and we pride ourselves in being a small company on Twitch that has since launch been able to provide health insurance, you know, and provide stability for our employees and make them feel like they have a career here that can lead them to other careers. So we don't want to waste time just doing things to do them. So there's always the question of why every step of that process, and making sure that we're reaching our own internal goals to tell the kind of stories we want to tell. But each show is completely different. And we often find that each show will have its different process based on, like Malika said, is this an idea we came up with for our own channel? For the instance of Kolok 1991, that was just me wanting to see how far we could push live technology with face tracking and live video effects, and tell a horror story with a mass input of an audience So because that was completely internal and an internal idea with no outside forces, we can skip a ton of steps and be experimenting as we go. Whereas around the same time when we're talking to D&D about doing D&D wrestling, you know, we have to provide assets, we have to provide a plan, a pitch deck and casting and everything else. And there's a much longer process there to get to the same result, but it all kind of depends on where we start in that process.
I think the key words here are goals and deliverables, right? Especially with a client, there's deliverables sometimes every day, or at least 2-3 times a week with these productions that we do with our branded partners.
Nice. So do you guys strictly do things on the Twitch channel, or do you also provide production services outside of the Twitch sphere?
We provide a lot of production services that we're usually not allowed to talk about.
Yeah. Live event coverage, for example. We've worked officially and not officially with a lot of conventions or vendors at conventions to cover their activations at their booths or their pop-ups. We did a red carpet premiere of the new My Hero Academia movie that was a lot of fun for Funimation. Yeah, we do a lot of cool, fun stuff. Yeah,
we do. Yeah, we kind of and I can say this because I feel like we have to say it. We've earned it. Like, we are within the space that we fill. We are some of the pioneers and innovators of live streaming within a budget, and within a budget that is not, you know, NFL Films Live, which is, you know, I think esports is filling a certain void of the big and the gloss and the, you know, and we kind of fill that need of if somebody needs to run an event and they need live coverage,
yeah,
but it needs to fit within their marketing budget for the quarter. You know, we have those abilities and we've pioneered a lot of those tools and ways that we can do it, make it interactive. So we have, I mean, we've worked directly for Twitch. We've worked for Amazon. We've worked for Microsoft. We've worked for
Gen Con, Nintendo.
Yeah, we've had a lot of really great clients that have asked us to run their live streams for them. And sometimes we're able to tell people about them afterwards. Lots of times we're so NDA'd to hell, we're not allowed to tell people about the cool stuff we're doing.
We also helped a local news station, for example, get up to par with like what's going on with live streaming. So yeah, we've expanded even outside of like nerdy companies. It's been a lot of fun.
That's awesome. When you guys, when you talk about pioneering a lot of the stuff for live streaming, I imagine you are very in tune and have a very good pulse on new tech as it comes out. When a new, you know, red camera is announced, do you guys like...
Unfortunately, yeah.
So do you guys, COVID non-existent, do you guys travel to a lot of the conventions and everything like that for the tech?
I used to be really big on that. I used to even speak at NAB, and I've spoke for Black Magic Design at a couple cons as well, where as a brand rep for them, since we use a lot of their equipment. So I used to be very involved in those kind of tech events, but even before COVID, I just don't have time. And I was seeing that there wasn't much I was getting out of it, that I couldn't just research on a website and just keep working from home. But we try, or I personally try to stay really on the up and up of new tech that's coming out and in what ways that tech can support our goals. And it's a deep, tough route to go down because it's expensive. You know, like as new tech comes out, there's always that question of like, do we need this? How much will improve our workflow? And how much can we just keep using the tech that we already have? I think too often I try to advise other streamers and streaming companies to not get too excited by what's shiny. We run into this a lot with other clients. And when I used to do production for commercials, I used to be back in producing world and I ran a production company. We ran into the same thing where it was like every new job, they want the newest red before we even like figure out what is the goal of this project. Because you can be sitting there going through the goals and be like, what's our delivery? You know, what do we need to be like light and nimble? What are our goals here? We don't need the red. We can use a Canon 5D Mark II. This is ridiculous. And streamers, I think, are starting to fall into this a lot as well, where they're like, oh, we got to get the new Sony and the Cam Link and everything else, and got to get this new mic. And you got to really think about your output and your input and sometimes break it down and be like, well, at the end of the day on Twitch, your max output's 5,500 kilobytes per second often. And, you know, how do you like Do you want the newest and best camera, or do you want to save some money, get yourself a GH4 with a used lens, save a couple $1,000s? And at the end of the day, no one's going to be able to tell the difference between that and a brand new $4,000 Sony. So it's, we try to keep up with these things, but always being aware of like, what do we really need and what tech will help push us to the next place. And there's been a lot of exciting stuff come out even since COVID started that we've been able to employ into our workflow. And then other stuff where I try not to get too excited about. My other tech nerd friends, Crank Gameplays, and I talk a lot about tech, and we have a little private group where we just send tech releases back and forth. And we're like, are you getting this? Are you getting this? I'm like, no, I can't. I want to justify it for our workflow, but I can't. I just can't.
So how big is your team altogether?
Well, there is, I could count them on one hand, 5 people right now.
And we just hired someone because we have a secret project we're not allowed to talk about. But
yeah, ask us in like 2 weeks.
All right, I will.
Yeah. But we've been able to just hire, and we'll probably be hiring one more because this job requires a couple new hires. But the
Two more.
Yeah, primarily we're usually just a team of 4. You know, it's myself, Malika, and then my brother, Lucas, who also show ran for Geek and Sundry after I left. He ran things over there for a year. And then Adam, who's a part of our Hyper Heroes initiative and our YouTube channel. And so we're all pretty much executives at the company, but we're also all doing the down and dirty work daily of, you know, every minute little thing that passes through.
So when you guys have a, we'll just, you know, stick with the Twitch stream, what role do each one of you facilitate when that go live button is pressed? Because Zach, I've seen you on there DMing. I've seen, you know, multiple camera switches. What role does each one of you facilitate when you go live?
It really depends on if we're in COVID or not.
All of us at the same time.
Yeah. When in COVID, we've had to adapt to where
we're all on camera talent.
Yeah. And I've had to change, like at the beginning of COVID, I was able to quickly kind of adapt our studio to be completely remotely run from the people on camera. So every hotkey, every button, everything can be, there's no one at the board. It's all being run by the people on camera with hotkeys and every graphic, every pop-up. But typically, let's, you know, go back before March. You know, if we use Coloc as an example, you know, a typical live streaming day for us on a Monday would be, you know, I get up really early and I go through the tech I'm going to need for that day. I start setting up that tech, and then I start working on my GM notes and sharing any notes with players before they get here. We would try to have some sort of magic trick every episode. Sometimes Malika would help facilitate that magic trick throughout the day. And then Adam would be our board operator on that show. And Lucas was on the show. But those responsibilities change day to day depending on who's on camera, who's not. You know, Malika has to handle so much of our, you know, day-to-day bookkeeping and meetings and...
Yeah, I just want to shout out all the people who do administrative tasks. I feel like they're really underappreciated, especially if they're women in the entertainment industry. But it is payroll, contracts, bookkeeping, insurance. We have so much insurance here. I'm very proud to say our CPA has told us we have some of the best corporate hygiene out of any of his clients. And that kind of stuff is super important to us, not only because legal reasons, but we're very proud to do things legitimately, almost too legitimately. Like, we have production insurance here. We have, you know, multiple kinds of health insurance for our employees. We have, and then as we grow our client base, we have to increase those insurance just to be able to work with these bigger clients. Otherwise, we're a liability to collaborate with. So I just do a lot of that kind of logistical stuff that people don't really see on camera. But it's the kind of stuff that keeps me up at 3 a.m., you know, many nights.
I wonder how many other Twitch streamers have had to go through detailed security checks.
Yeah. You know, like, I've done our company has done more than once.
We've been audited for security checks. Yeah.
Security audit because, you know, we have had celebrities in our studio space. And, you know, their managers, their agents, their handlers will come scope out our studio to make sure it's safe for them to come here. You know, like it's on another level. And I think people don't even realize, oh, is that why you're busy?
Right. A lot of what Malika does is behind the camera. So I feel bad because anytime I tune in and I see Malika's on camera, I know that she's not sleeping that night because her tasks only stack up every minute that she's on camera and she's helping like run the channel. You know, her tasks just keep, they don't go anywhere. They're still there. So, you know, it's a lot to do this the way that we do it. Every person here sacrifices so, so much. And I think we've been able to create a business model that works as a startup, but we're constantly trying to figure out how we adapt and evolve because it's not sustainable the way that we run this company. You know, we're year five now, and we've made some really great changes in year five, thanks to Malika's leadership, but we have to make even more to make this sustainable because you can't live the startup life forever.
Well, they say 50% of startups fail in the first 5 years, and our 5 year anniversary is coming up. You know, I like to place it at Christmas because that was when like myself, Jordan and Zach were like, let's do it. And we like celebrated it at like a corporate party. So yeah, almost 5 years. We'll see.
That's awesome. So now Malika, you are the CEO of the company, correct?
Yep.
How, I'm trying to think of the best way to word this. There's an underrepresentation of female leaders within the space, especially within live streaming and the companies that are within, surrounding, and adjacent to live streaming. What has been the, I mean, you know, barring any, you know, comments on your sex or anything like that, but what has been one of the biggest hurdles that you have experienced as a CEO? You guys are very progressive as a company. You're looking at tech and doing things that nobody else has even thought to implement yet. What has been the biggest struggle that you have personally faced in the space?
Quite a bit, but I want to highlight maybe two. There's the usual stuff, and there's fantastic like feminist writers and psychologists and scientists who've studied these things that I just get snubbed all the time. And I'm given the microphone sometimes literally less often than some of the male employees here. And then you multiply that with I'm also a person of color. Like that's just my life and my reality. But there's an additional thing that I think is unique to our situation, especially during COVID. This quarantine has given us all the opportunity to look deeply into ourselves and question, you know, what is our role in creating like social change, right? Black lives matter. They really matter. And that has affected me in such a deep level that I realize some other people can't relate to. So I have to overextend my volume to make sure people understand the kinds of struggle people of color, you know, non-binary folks, transgender folks, LGBTQIA, all these groups that I represent because I am a member of, like, you know, it is so, so important. And, you know, even if I get like a little less of the microphone than everybody else at the table, at least I have my pinky toe in the door and I have to represent my people. Because if, you know, sometimes I'm the only one who can. And I feel like oftentimes I don't deserve that position, but I realize I'm the only one who can in this situation. When I'm on a panel with only, you know, a certain kind of face and I'm the darkest skinned person there, I realize I'm the only one who can do this. So I have to show up. And it takes a lot of emotional energy, but I want to do it because I have to. I feel very deeply compelled to fight.
That's so one of the things I've really appreciated about following your guys' content, of Hyper's content, is every time I tune in, you guys have a very diverse cast. You guys, I've seen content creators that I personally have never seen or followed before. And just being able to see, you know, I love Critical Role. I love what they do. But, you know, there definitely can be said that there's a diversity problem within that show cast. And, you know, they're making strides to improve that with the additional shows and things like that. But just when I first tuned into you guys, oh God, what was it? All I remember, it was Dave B. Walters, and he was going on one of his just epic monologues. And I was sold, instantaneously sold. So I love that you guys, you know, at the core of your content, visually being able to see all these people, all these BIPOC creators there on screen, I think it's amazing. And, you know, I don't want to go too much into, you know, like, why did you decide that? Because
it's the right thing to do. End of story.
Exactly.
Well,
exactly.
I mean, yeah. I think the why is actually important, because, you know, it's like she said, it's so easy to say it's the right thing to do. And I think it's important to show people that that why shouldn't be a discussion. It shouldn't even be a argument. It's a, well, duh, you know, like, just do it. Just do it. And that's not to say that it doesn't come without its challenges.
Right. I was going to say, but okay, saying it is a lot easier than doing it, right? It comes with a lot mm-hmm. of additional challenges, yeah. simply like less person of color applicants, right? To roles that we're trying to cast. And that's just a systemic societal problem where I'm not going to name names, but we have an awesome collaborator we work with, and they felt the need to prepare all these like pitch materials to, you know, justify any choice they want to make or anything they want to submit to us for us to develop creatively. And, you know, we have other very talented people that we love as well, who don't necessarily feel that need to justify each decision or each creative choice they want to come to us with. And it seems like in the first column, it's mostly people of color. And in the second column, it's not people of color. Right?
It's mainly white males who we work with, who are very forward-thinking individuals, but they don't even realize that societally, it's easy for them to come to us and say, hey, I have an idea. What if we tried to do this? This would be really cool. And we have to be like, okay, great. Thanks for your idea. And then we have people of color who will set up a meeting, present us with a pitch deck, and like get really nervous and want to go through.
Because I know men, yeah.
If even, yeah.
Sometimes I have to like wrangle it out of them and be like, you matter. I see you.
Right.
You know?
Right. Right. And we try to empower them to feel comfortable to do that, but systematically. And, you know, we've realized that this is bigger than us. This is an overall thing that's happening before they even get to our door. Societally, you know, everyone's got their heart in the right place, but having to create an environment where they feel safe and comfortable to come to us with these ideas, you know, it does come with challenges, because if you just accept all the good ideas that come to you, you're going to like, because society has shaped it in that way, all of a sudden you wake up and be like, wait a minute, why do we only have white created shows of one very specific voice here? Oh, those are the pitches we are getting. Well, why are those just the pitches we're getting? Oh, because people of color don't feel as empowered as the white men, who have very like different confidence when they come through our door, and they don't realize that. They don't, it's not that they're trying.
And it's like not their fault.
Right. They just have been empowered their whole lives to be like, yo, I got this great idea. Let's do it. And sometimes they are great ideas, but we have to be strong and be like, okay, but let's hear every other idea. And sometimes that means you have to put in the work to search for them and empower others to give you those ideas, because society's made it harder to even just get them from the individuals you want them from, because they don't feel as supported in this industry. And we have a lot of work to do as creators to keep making people feel comfortable enough to give us even their bad ideas. You know, like that's the bit, like when we get pitches from people of color, they are usually really good and really thought out and very like, I can't wait till we get to a point where I'm getting really bad pitches from lots of different people. Cause that means we've gotten to a place where they feel comfortable enough to even just be like, I'm going to shoot for the moon. But often it's like, you know, we have to like really, really pull to get them out. And it's, we still have a lot of work to do in that regard. We have so much more work to do. And I think to say that it's also, it takes work, you know, like Malika said, we have a long list of people ready to be cast on things. And because as a culture within this industry, the cast list for people of color is much shorter. You know, it's harder, and you have to work harder to find people to fill those roles. You just do. We have a long list of not people of color who are ready to be on anything we do. So, you know, it's really easy to fill those spots, and it would be really easy to fall in that trap of like, well, it's easier, let's just fill those roles. And I think you have to be ready to put in the work. You just have to. You have to make it a goal. Otherwise, it's so easy to fall back on, you know, And this, you know, to that extent, we saw this when I was at Geek & Sundry too. Like, we had a very clear, you know, when I launched that channel, it was, and it's a shame in some ways that, you know, Critical Role, it's not a shame. They're amazing people. They got the baton and they ran with it well. But they were never expected to be the people who got the baton when we launched. And we had concerns about diversity from the start, but they were coming to us as a group already. And that's the only show that happened that way. Our starting cast was Ify Wadiwe, Hector Navarro, Steph Woodburn. We brought in Erica Ishii and Becca Scott. You know, that was our starting group, and that's who we were building the network off of. And we tried to make sure every other show that came in, we were building off of that idea and that concept. So even that started in that way. But then when it kind of turned to Critical Role having the main view and the main kind of baton that they got to carry, I think we should have immediately redirected to be aware of, like, okay, this happened. Now we have to shift. Because we had a very strong initiative for the overall channel, but this now represents the overall outside view, and it is not diverse enough and does not represent the entire company as a whole. I mean, it was Felicia Day's company, and to her credit, she was always very mindful of that. And she was always very mindful of, like, we need to diversify and we need to make sure that we have the right voices telling their stories. And I think it's hard sometimes to step in, you know, and do something that you know is going to cause issues and backlash. And it's hard. It's hard. And we've been a victim of this as well. We've made mistakes. We are not, this is partly why I think our company is in a much better place with Malika running it. I can have the best intentions in the world, but I'm not going to be able to understand Malika's pain and what she's lived through and her experience and her being able to be at the table and let us know when we're not being aware of that and cognizant of it, even in our behind the scenes meetings where she'll, you know, have to step in. And I hate that she has to go through this emotional labor for all of us, but we would be making more mistakes without her leadership. And we know because I did, and, you know, and I would make those mistakes. And then because you're just moving forward and you think you have the right intentions. And then you look at your screen or you turn into your own channel and you're like, wait a minute, how did we let this happen? There's not a single person of color on screen right now. Where did that fall through the cracks? Oh, because we're not thinking about it, because we don't. And it's easy for us to fall into that trap. So I think having Malika in that leadership position has changed our company ultimately so much for the better.
I do want to give a little bit of advice, because people have sought me out for kind of like diversity consulting, that kind of thing. Having one person of color isn't enough, and it puts an enormous pressure on them to like relieve everybody's guilt of their privilege, you know? So if you're an organizer of a convention, if you are trying to build a community around your game store, you know, gaming is so wonderful because it builds community. If you are a producer on a podcast, on a show, that kind of thing, you know, if that person has somebody else with them so that they can both kind of represent a fuller experience of what it means to be marginalized, you know, you're going to be so much stronger and all the more better for it. So you can't just hire like one diversity consultant to fix your convention. You know, you really need a small team, and they should be paid, you know?
Yes. Yes. Well, and thank you both for diving into that. And then just to kind of, you know, jump back, I didn't mean to make it sound like the, you know, explaining and diving into the why wasn't important.
No, I didn't take it that way. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't take it that way. No.
No, totally, totally. But, you know, just everything that I've seen from your guys' social presence, your guys' content, the way that you interact with your actors on and off screen, all that's visible, I should say, is you guys are putting that, you know, the best foot forward. Putting Malika into the role of the CEO is just another one of those examples that you guys are doing it with the best intentions.
Yeah.
And
I want to make something really clear in that remark too, because I don't want that to be misconstrued. I know there's a lot of bad faith actors out there who will try
to misconstrue
things. Malika was not hired because she's a person of color. Malika is better at a lot of things in that role than I am. We're both very honest with ourselves as people, and we talk a lot about what we're good and what we're bad at. And Malika has made changes to this company, not from a diversity angle, but from a books and, you know, company hygiene level. She's into systems. Like she...
I'm into systems, okay? I'm a game designer. I love systems. And I think about if something were to happen to me or if I had to step away, the person that would be handed this position now has systems in place that will set them up for success, hopefully forever.
Right.
That's the way I think.
We know what my strengths are. We know what Malika's strengths are. And we recognize that in this instance, Malika has strengths that can lead our company to a better place than I could. And the byproduct of that happens to be we get to put our money where our mouth is when it comes to diversity. So at the end of the day, it's because she's the right person for the job. She happens to be, you know, a person of color that can speak to these experiences better than we ever could and can make sure that our company's moving the right direction in that as well. But also, she's better at it, at a lot of these things that needed to happen for us to survive as a company.
And kudos to the company for being able to recognize that. There's a lot of companies, even that I personally have been a part of, especially in the startup sphere, where the quote-unquote best person was the person who had the idea of the company, and they struggled through a lot of creating the systems, even thinking that the system should exist. And then you have, you know, junior members of the company or even just contractors, you know, 1099s coming on and being like, oh, hey, well, what about X or Y? And then they get, you know, brought on. So, you know, major props to you all for being able to recognize the strengths of the team and putting everybody in a role where they were going to be able to shine and help the company to shine.
Yeah, because ultimately that's what I want. As an owner of the company, I can put my ego aside if there's people who can do a better job than me. I know where my struggles were, and there were certain things when I was being CEO that I had a lot of issues with. There's certain things I did really well, and I was able to do a lot for the company, I think creatively and community-wise, but I was hitting a wall, and I couldn't get over that wall, and it took Malika taking the reins to get us over that wall. And I'm very thankful for that as an owner. I think at the end of the day, it's like, yeah, great. Now we're in a better position. And I do think it's hard when you're in these roles because you really do have to put one of the biggest challenges with our job in general is putting personal feelings aside. And it's not just in that looking at numbers standpoint. It's a lot of the decisions we make. You know, we get yelled at by our community all the time of, you know, like, you didn't give the show a chance or you don't like these people or blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no, that is not. There's shows I love so much and thought were amazing concepts that no one latched onto. And you have to be willing to put your personal feelings aside and do what's best for the overall company health because, you know, it's better to exist than to not exist. And that means sometimes you have to do very hard things that are outside of your personal feelings.
Yeah. And I think that's actually required for good leadership, right? Because I'm a human being. I have feelings, you know, like, especially when the protests were happening, like, I cannot watch that much racialized violence and not just like go to bed every day and cry. You know, like, I have a lot of feelings. I'm an artist. But I recognize my job is to make sure everybody feels okay to do their job. My job is to make everybody's job easier, even as if it's at, you know, for the sacrifice of my own like happiness or ease or time, you know, and you know, we talk about all the other like behind the camera kind of stuff. So one of the unique challenges of Hyper is we do bring in on so many wonderful faces on the channel, but that comes with an additional hat of like, now I have to do HR, right? So like I may be like heads down trying to find a sponsorship for this show to pay these wonderful faces more money. But if I'm not also there emotionally present, checking in with them and thanking them for like opening up their hearts and speaking their emotional truth as actors on camera, then they also don't feel good about the work that they do here. So I have to be available for both. And it's, you know, sometimes I'm like, oh, this is my limit. It's very exhausting.
Sometimes I do wish, though, I wish there was a way to pull back that curtain sometimes. I think a challenge that we've run into often as leaders in this space is it's very easy when you're in charge of something to be painted as void of that emotion when you have people who work under you. And I think a challenge that Malika and I, as people with feelings, run into often is so much of our work is trying to find money for other people to take care of them, to the extent that I haven't been on payroll for over a year and a half. And then we'll have people misconstrued us not checking in with them, or, you know, like, we're working with our heads down, not just for us, but for them. And I think a big challenge has been personally how hard we work sometimes to protect those individuals and give them a job, and then feel as if like they probably have no idea how much work we're doing and how much we're sacrificing to give them these opportunities. But I also understand from their perspective that there's no security in that either, because then something like COVID happens and we can't have talent coming through our door anymore. You know, so I also understand from their viewpoint of like, you know, it's, you're still a private contractor. You're still coming in, and a pandemic can happen. And just like that, you're left in the wind to fend for yourself. And there's nothing we can do. Like, there's literally almost nothing we can do on our end other than take care of our full-time employees. And that's been hard enough during all this.
So now, what have been some of the pivots that you guys have made for COVID? I know we've kind of touched on a couple throughout, but can you just dive into that a little bit? Just
Well, I think the first thing was very quickly when the shutdown order was put in place, we changed our schedule and our workflow to be us. You know, us as a crew on camera speaking to our community as honestly and openly as possible, as much as possible. In the past, we'd have never done this. We would hire actors to be on camera more than us because we have work to do. So I've never worked this hard in my life. And I don't know if Malika has either. Like, we are all working crazy hard because our responsibilities didn't go anywhere. And now we've doubled up on it because we're having to be on camera, doing the shows, keeping the community satisfied, and then all the other responsibilities we used to do. And we used to pay talent to do that because we didn't have time. We've always wanted to be more connected to the community, but to run the company we want to run, someone else has to do that for us and represent our company because there's just too much to do. But during COVID, we've had to, and it sucks because Twitch is fickle. I mean, Twitch is so fickle. It was working really well when we started, and we pushed for 3 months of like, all right, we're going to do this. Let's go. And then we had a couple big back-end jobs pop up where Malika and I had to be like, okay, we got...
In a time of economic uncertainty, you got to say yes.
We
got to
say yes
to
these big jobs. So we have to pull back from on camera a little bit, reduce our hours a little bit. And the second we do that, we see our numbers drop. We see our concurrence drop. We see our subscribers drop. And it hurts. It's tough. It's so tough because it's just like we don't have enough hours in the day, quite literally, to do what we need to do to keep the community as healthy as possible and also get the jobs that we need to keep the company running in the middle of a pandemic. You know, it's just, it's so disheartening sometimes with Twitch when you can just in real time watch like, all right, we're doing great. All right. What if we pulled back just a little to work on this other project?
So I can take a nap, you know?
Right. So I can pull back just a little to work on this other project that has all these meetings set up for us that we have to hit. And surely our community will be okay with us like starting 2 hours later, right? We'll be okay. And then 2 weeks later, you look at your stats and you're like, oh no, what have we done?
Yeah, like the lowest like historical subs of
We started
so
pandemic, pivoting very quickly and hitting the max number of subs that we've had. Great concurrence. The community felt great. We pulled back because we were getting... I mean, quite literally, we were like sleeping like 4 hours a night. It just wasn't sustainable. And we were like, we have to work on these other jobs or we're going to miss out on opportunities that keep the company alive. And we pulled back just a little bit. And then, you know, we checked in 2 weeks ago and it was like, oh yeah, this is the lowest our subs have ever been, lowest concurrence. And all it took was pivoting a little bit to work on other stuff. And in the past, we would have hired actors to come in, keep our numbers up, keep the community feeling like... And let's be real. The other thing is everyone's on Twitch now. Your competition is, you know, it's very high for people's attention. And if you can't give your audience your full attention and, you know, they're just going to go watch somebody else. They have that ability. So we're running into that problem.
And I also want to say that what I really love about Zach as like a human being and a collaborator in this business is that we're not phone it in kind of people. want to do everything 110%. Even Zach made fun of me the other day of like how like I clean the fridge. Because it's like, I'm going to clean the fridge, but I'm like taking everything out and sanitizing each shelf, you know, like, and I think we're very proud people and we're very proud of our team, but that comes with, you know, working to your own expectations. And if we can't give 110% when we're on camera and 110% when we're in meetings and 110% for our clients, we like get angry and frustrated with ourselves. So it's very, very tough. But at a certain point, you're like, why can't I push more? And you're like, I'm tired and I'm getting older. And this isn't a sprint, it's a marathon.
So now, do you guys or have you considered working with a lot of the on Twitch talent? I mean, they've got amazing setups, amazing mic setups. And I know that there's a healthy smattering of, you know, people of all walks that, you know, are on Twitch and creating content and stuff like that.
I mean, we've gone around down that route before. There was a part of our company where we thought we were going to be more of a hub/collaboration place. And I do not think this is the fault of Twitch streamers, but Twitch has in and of itself made changes over the last couple of years that I think make that difficult now. One, I think that's quite a simple one that when you see the long-term effects of it, kind of makes sense. I think part of the reason discoverability is down on the platform is because of the ad roll that happens every time you switch channels. So if you're a viewer and you have a choice between just staying on this channel or going to a new channel to see what this thing that I've kind of heard about is, but you're going to be confronted with 2 minutes of ads when you click it before you even get to see what's on the channel, you're creating an environment where people don't want to experiment and jump around. I've been collecting back-end stats from my experience on Twitch for six and a half years now. And I've had front page promotions, I've had marketing promotions, I've had all these things over those years. And we see really interesting audience changes over those 6 years. And we have a good relationship with Twitch, so I'm not going to sit here and dog on them too hard right now.
And I think we love all the individuals we work with.
We do.
You know?
But things
have
changed.
Cool people.
And lots of times when those changes happen, they're understandable. Even and with good intentions. You know, when Prime subs, you know, when your Twitch Prime subs were first announced, like those had the best intentions behind them, but it changed part of how people subscribe to things. It's like, instead of subscribing to every channel you like and jumping around, you're like, well, now I have one free sub that I'll shift to other channels. And it changed the overall way that people are interacting with that thing, that over long term, you're like, oh, a lot of mid-range streamers are seeing higher or lower numbers of subs instead of higher. Your big streamers obviously get these rewards tenfold, but your mid-range often feel the blunt of these changes and how they can affect them over long term. So it's hard for us to collaborate with a lot of people because the platform itself encourages you to not leave your community. And if you're a streamer, you're encouraged to not really push to other people, especially when our goal, it'd be different if our goal was max numbers. If we were a streaming company where we were only interested in max numbers based on trends and things like that, it would be different. But when our internal goal as a company is to convert you into an active member of the community, I can understand why other streamers might be like, well, it'd be kind of weird to partner up with Hyper because their ultimate goal is to convert community members into being heavily involved, engaged community members.
Hyper Interactive.
Yeah, which could hurt their bottom line if people move from their channel to ours. So it unfortunately just the changes on the platform with discoverability and the way these communities are working, I think make it hard for streamers to work together even when they want to. If you're a person who only streams as a variety person on multiple people's channels, obviously you've set yourself up that way. It's fine. If you're a Twitch streamer who streams 5 to 7 days a week, nearly all day, you might feel a little reserved about collaborating with a company like Hyper, who is also streaming 5 to 7 weeks a day in your same time slots and who might be then siphoning resources from your brand. So,
well, you have to, yeah, like I have to, okay. So this is, I think what Zach is trying to say here, or one of the main challenges is, you have these wonderful content creators, like you said, from all walks of life, all over the world, really cool people. who, you know, they have their own challenges.
Yes.
You know, a lot of streamers who are like, do I make rent this month? I just got to feed like me and like my girlfriend and my dog or something. And Hyper has, we're on, I don't want to say in like a different level, but we have different requirements.
Our overhead's really high.
Our overhead is extremely high to have a studio, to give health insurance to everybody, right?
Are we up all to, we might, and I used to share this and it's been a while since we shared it, but I think we've increased our costs. We might be up to like 45 to 50K a month overhead just to run the company.
Depending on the month, because I did the averages last year, we run 40 to 70K per month. But those months were 70K, it's because we've taken on a big client and we're paying out all the contractors that are video editing and camera and production and stuff like that, producing. But it's like, it's kind of weird when you have this person who's like barely able to pay rent. And then there's other people who are like, can you help us pay for our health insurance? When this person might not even have health insurance, right? So it's like, there's, if it was just like Zach and I in our apartment, and in some ways it is just like we live where our studio is. We're just like framed completely different. You know, we're just like in a different,
and
we're individuals and we're
unfortunately in this middle range. I think if we were one tier higher where we could say, hey, we want all of you to collaborate with us and we'll pay you what you're worth to be using your community's resources. Because I think sometimes when we're working on gigs, the brands we're working with aren't thinking about that enough. They try to be like, well, let's hire this person and let's sneak into their contract that they'll tweet about it. They'll talk about it. They'll do this and that. And I'm like, yeah, you got to pay for that. Like, building community is a resource. And I try to put value in other individuals that have done that on Twitch as well. That community, it's something that Twitch streamers don't talk about much because I feel like they don't want to admit how competitive it is. And I understand that, but I think let's be real. Like, these are the challenges we face. We can recognize that. I think it's on Twitch to increase numbers on their platform and better discoverability. I think there's so much content out there that people would want to watch that they don't know exists. Don't put that on the individuals, put that on the platform, I think. But, you know, if we were just one tier higher, I think we could then go to all these people and say, hey, we would love to have you on our channel and we'll pay you what you're worth to be using your community's resources. But we can't do that. We don't have that kind of disposable funds. We don't have that kind of, we haven't built our company in that way. So we wouldn't see the return on it. So often we've seen through the years of our experimentation, the return isn't there for us to be having other people come in. And in fact, we've seen diminishing returns if we do it too much. And sometimes we have to focus internal. And sometimes that means it's easier for us to build talent up, you know, like build talent out, hire locally. And we know eventually they're going to really love Twitch and they're probably going to start their own Twitch channel. And a lot of our community will go over to them and will support them. And that will hurt our bottom line. But that's just a sword that we've chosen to fall on. And that's just the way it is. But we ultimately have been able to see, like, over time, so many people that we've built up, we can directly track how that affects our long-term monthly revenue. It's these untalked about costs. If you know, it's like, yes, talent might cost a little bit this much now. If we build them up to a certain extent and then the talent goes over to here, there might be a certain number of community members that then support them at this level that falls out of our bottom line. But that's okay. Like, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm saying these are things we are just always having to be aware of, talk about, look at our data. And to that extent, like, sometimes it makes me feel better because sometimes I wish there's certain talent we could pay more. And it makes me feel better knowing that our community is going to continue supporting them when they go on to do their thing because we were never able to pay them what they were worth. And I feel like that's been a big challenge for us as a company to keep our company alive. When we have sponsored gigs, we get to pay people what they're worth. And that feels amazing. When it's a hyper internal project, like, you know, we're paying the bare required minimum by the state, just like all of our employees are at the company, you know, and myself included. And that doesn't feel good. We want to pay people more.
We never pay anybody minimum wage. We've always paid everybody a little bit more than that. But
well, it's
the
like
challenge
the SAG
now
new media
is,
breakdown rate. Yeah.
Right. But what is awesome about living and working and making media in Los Angeles is minimum wage is slowly increasing. And now I have the challenge to try to keep up people's rate, at least at that kind of percentage or that ratio.
Well, that's, you know, again, it's, you know, just major kudos to you guys for seeing these things and having the care and compassion to want to see these things, to be aware of them. I don't know if you guys saw what happened with Burger King on Twitch very recently, where they were just donating on people's channels. And
it's awful. Fucking awful. I see a lawsuit happening eventually.
I'm surprised,
honestly,
one hasn't already like soft been announced.
It's probably in the works, honestly, because it's breaking certain requirements that we as streamers even have to go through for ad space. So, you know, I think it's against certain FCC violations.
Oh, yeah, this laundry list of TOS violations, FCC violations, and everything like that. So it's, you know, it's crazy to see that, you know, that you guys are here. You're getting 4 hours of sleep. You're sneaking in naps. And then there's companies like this who are just like, oh, you know what? We can just throw $100,000 at, you know, this marketing campaign for 3 hours and borrow other channels' resources. And you guys are making the very conscious effort of being aware of the other content creators, their cost, a fair wage of, you know, their community resources and things like that. It's, you know, having a background within the live streaming space, a lot of these conversations that we had with, you know, ad agencies or anything like that, they never went like the one I'm having with you two. It was always like, yeah,
it's tough.
It's insane.
And we have these conversations too. And sometimes, this is where I have to like, sometimes I'm bad at this. I've gotten in trouble in meetings because I'll very bluntly say what I think is right. And that'll keep us from a job because when we're working with certain brands, they don't want to hear us complain or tell them like, that's not right. Or that's not how you do this. It's not a good thing. And I know that it's easy to be like, oh, but it's the right thing to do. But these things are complex. It's complex because sometimes I open my mouth and I'm like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have said that so bluntly. Maybe we could have eased them into that decision. And now I'm not going to be able to pay a certain employee a certain amount that I want to because I lost that gig because I was too blunt with someone who doesn't understand our space. So it's hard to find that line sometimes because I understand marketing companies, they have a goal, they have a thing that they have to do, and they are going to be ignorant to the struggles of the general Twitch community and how the Twitch environment works. They're going to be ignorant to that. And it's really hard for me sometimes when they throw ideas out that I'm like, oh my God, that is so bad.
So, I used to be a marketing director. That's what I did before I moved to Los Angeles to go to graduate school to study game design. And, you know, I have a different way with that kind of lingo and those types of people because I used to work adjacent to them. So I think that's part of the reason why I became like CEO was like, how can we intrinsically motivate our collaborators to speak positively about your brand? You know, like that's like how I frame it with these partners. But ultimately, Zach and I, you know, also something that I love with both of us is we're not the kind of people that like we need to put our heads on pillows with a clear conscience at night, even if it's only for a few hours. So I don't live my life in a way that's like, that's going to come back to bite me. I screwed over some person. And additionally, Zach and I have been burned by corporate situations before on a personal level. We've been creative freelancers for like a decade, you know, even before coming to do Hyper RPG and Twitch and everything. And we remembered how bad that felt. You know, I came from the games industry and, you know, I have worked at more than one company where groups of people were laid off and everybody cried. You know, like that's like very, you don't forget that kind of stuff. And we try our best here to like run our company responsibly and at least communicate where
we're
at.
It's tough. I think,
you know,
honestly, one of the biggest challenges with running a company on Twitch is transparency because we have a tendency to share so much of our lives with our community and our audience. And I honestly believe it's the right way to go, but it has some crazy challenges, some very, very hard challenges because as much as you can tell your community something, there are a lot of things that happen in business situations where you legally can't tell them everything. And that's not just NDAs about projects you're working on. That's like reasons certain jobs might not happen. You know, reasons certain people may not be able to be hired, or reasons certain people had to be fired. You can't legally tell your community why you had to fire someone if they cross some sort of boundary. And unfortunately, like, there's that like fine line of like, you're creating this environment where you tell them everything and you're so honest and you share your numbers. And then sometimes you have to be like, I'm sorry, I can't. I just can't. And that hurts me. But you just can't. And I think some of the things that end up stressing us out so much is trying to always do the right thing in that gray area of what is the right thing. You know, like when we have these people who put so much trust and faith in our community that they're donating certain amounts of money that I could never have a job or resources to do that. And I'm so thankful. And I feel like they're all investors in our company and us. And I want to be as upfront and honest with them as possible. And it will keep me up at night, stressing me out like crazy when there's just certain things where I'm like, I can't. I'm legally not allowed to explain to the people who are funding this company certain things that are going on behind the scenes. Like, I just can't do it. And it just drives me crazy. It eats me up inside. And Malika and I will spend so much time like obsessing over these things.
And it could be all sorts of stuff. You know, it's not only just like, for example, when we were pitching Power Rangers and it took 8 months and we had to be quiet about it for almost a year. I was going to say, you know, like, for example, you know, because I don't want to keep it too open, like minded, and people are like, what are they talking about? What secrets? You know, like sometimes a key collaborator has a personal tragedy that we have to protect. You know, like we have, and they don't want the world to know about that. It's that kind of stuff where I can't just like go on Twitch stream and be like, I'm sorry I was late today, but I had to deal with this, you know, emergency or something. So those are the kinds of things where we're like, you know, you just suck it up. That's what being a leader is, you know?
I mean, that's a very vanilla example. I mean, sometimes it's bad stuff. It's, you know, sometimes it's bad stuff or, you know, and we're legally not allowed to talk about it.
You know, I understand that. Just recently, the Twitch sphere became on fire, I guess is the best way to describe it, with all the sexual assaults and everything that we're getting called out. So I can understand where, as a business owner, you still want to give that level of transparency. I mean, you guys just did a RV road trip and you streamed it. Like, you can't get much more transparent about, you know, the day-to-day life and content creation.
Yeah. But at the same time, while we're on that RV trip, Malika and I are having secret meetings at least 3 to 4 times a day.
Right.
Where do I sleep? What am I eating?
We are showing them everything, but then there's literally 3 to 4 meetings a day we're having secret meetings on that trip. But it is. And we know all about that. And I do think that it's tough because when that stuff comes up, and I've been involved in these situations before, when I can say something and when you can't, based on what is right, but also what is legal and what you're allowed to, like, I think the general public sometimes likes to paint this different picture on stuff and they just expect like certain things and they don't realize how much gray area there is and how sometimes it's not to protect an abuser, to protect the abused. And you have agreements with abused people who sometimes, you know, legally you're not allowed to out other people's experiences. You know, you can't, as a company especially, oh my God, that's a lawsuit waiting to happen. Like, you just can't do it. You can't. And you have to sit on the sidelines and wait and do the right thing. And it's really hard sometimes to know what that right thing is, especially when you're a company and you're a brand. We know what the right thing is as people. And we like will want to like shout from the rooftops as people. But then as a company where you have employees and owners and all this other stuff, you're like, oh my God, like how do we navigate this stuff? And Malika's, again, like to her credit, like we have an amazing legal team and we have amazing people that we talk to. She talks to her lawyer like once a week.
Hey, I text him. He texts me. We're buds.
You know, and always talking to them about these stresses that we have, because these are stresses we have as people. We're like, we want to do the right thing. What's the right thing? How do we do the right thing? And sometimes it sucks how much even the right thing isn't what you want to do. It's awful.
All right. Well, we're already pushing about an hour and 10 minutes here. So I would love to have the both of you back on the show in the future. This was an amazingly insightful interview. But Malika, Zach, where can we find you guys on the social sphere and then Hyper as well?
Well, you can follow me, hello_Malika, on Twitter and Instagram. And then you can follow HyperRPG on all the platforms, hyperrpg.com. You'll find all the links, except for on Twitter, where it's hyper_RPG.
There's been someone sitting on HyperRPG for over 10 years. They haven't tweeted, but Twitter won't release it.
Yeah, and then I got a sketch email about, hey, do you want this handle? And I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah, they're going to try to sell it to us. Ridiculous. But you can find me at Zach Eubank. That's ZACEUBANK. And I would be remiss if I didn't correct at the beginning. I'm also Zach Lim Eubank. Malika and I put our names together there. So we're one unit.
And stay tuned to our channel for some exciting new announcements. And we're going to be going to like Miami and back in That's October awesome. From Los yes. Angeles, getting back in the
we
RV.
We have a pretty crazy couple months coming up. Yeah. We have a couple big announcements that should be launching soon, but also our big across the nation road trip.
Yeah. Travels with Hyper in Search of America.
That's amazing. Thank you both again for coming on, chatting with us, and just really helping to peel back the layers of Hyper and what you guys do on a daily basis. Again, it's been very insightful. And again, I would love to have you guys on the show to talk more about, specifically the RV trips. Like, I know how much goes into some of that IRL tech, so I'd love to chat more about that in the future. But until then, again, thank you for coming on the show. And
thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, dude. It's been fun.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of Bardic Babble. Bardic Babble is a part of the Bard Podcast Network's family of shows. You can find Bardic Babble and all of our other shows at thebardpodcast.com. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe for updates on new episodes. We can't wait to share the next story with you.